I know this is a new series, and I'm excited to be learning with everybody here. What we're going to try to do is every week, as I was asked by our new shul president, Josh Coulter, to have a series where I share a little bit of detail about a shaila that I happen to be working on this week or in the last 2 weeks. Not always are they from this community. Sometimes they're questions that come in from other places. But I, Baruch Hashem, spend a lot of time working on shailas, and I'm happy to share that if that's of interest to anybody. If you ever have something that you'd like me to talk about, you're welcome to email me, and I'm happy to look into it and discuss it as well. So tonight's question, I think, is a very interesting one. And the one that we're going to deal with is, about 2 weeks ago, I found myself somewhere. A young man came over to say hello to me, and I asked him, what are you up to in life? He says, well, the truth is, I'm still single, but that won't be for too much longer. I'm getting engaged to him. And I said, wow, that's really exciting. It's really nice. I was happy to reacquaint myself with him. And naturally, I asked him the first question, which is, so how'd you meet the girl, and who set you up? Fair question. I thought that was a pretty safe question to be asking. And all of a sudden, he got very uncomfortable. Well, you know, it's a long story. I'm like, great. You know, I love good stories. So he says, the story is that he had a friend who he was very close with, and this friend of his was discussing with him about his a suggestion of a young lady that was suggested for him to go out with. And he was so taken by this young woman's profile that he heard from his friend. He said, you know, I really would love to go out with her myself. He didn't say that to his friend, but he decided to figure out how to get himself set up with this young woman, and instead of his friend going out with her, he went on the first date with her. And now, it's going so well, they are getting engaged. And he feels very uncomfortable. So he said to me, should I be feeling uncomfortable? After all, I seem to have hit it off with this young woman. She likes me. I like her. We both want to get engaged. She doesn't really know the backstory. My friend doesn't really know that I went behind his back and did this. And the question then becomes, is this something that is problematic, or is that something that he should not worry about at all? I think it's an interesting question. Now, some people may be rolling their eyes and saying, come on, that's not a shaila, just let people be, let people live. But the truth is, it is a shaila. And what's beautiful about this series, what I hope to share is, you'll see how Drachea Darche Noam v'chol nusivoseha shalom, you'll see how we live a Torah's chayim, and we live a Torah that is so relevant, and that every single question that comes up, you can look back into the sources and find the answer. Sometimes you have to creatively look for the answer. Sometimes you have to know where to look for the answer. It's not always where you might think it would be. But there is always a perspective that the Torah gives on every question, including this one. A second very beautiful aspect of going through a shaila is the fact that you see a span of hundreds and hundreds of years of Jewish history all converging, all coming together. So this particular question begins in the Gemara. It then trickles down to a Machlokas HaRishonim. Then it goes down into the Shulchan Aruch, which is the 1500s. Then in the 1700s. And then once again, it's discussed by Rav Moshe Feinstein in the 1900s. So this is a fascinating perspective that you can have a discussion that spans so many generations and so many millennia, and it all comes together to answer a contemporary question. What we begin with is a Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph. And the Gemara here, you don't have to follow along. It doesn't matter if you'd prefer not to. We're going to say everything outside regardless. But I just thought it was interesting to see from the source itself where this all begins. So the Gemara is in Maseches Kiddushin, where the Gemara has a number of very fascinating stories where you have, I thank Stewie for telling me what the official term of this is, a third-party interference. Is that correct? So the Gemara here discusses, or he said, the other way to say it is intentional interference. So in business law, you have such a concept where somebody is negotiating a deal, and then a third party comes in out of nowhere and runs an interference and starts getting in the way of the deal. So what is the halacha when that happens? Which is basically what happened in this case. There was a shaila in Eretz Yisrael, a similar shaila a couple of years ago when there was a taxi company in Yerushalayim, and the dispatcher calls out, somebody on Rehov Yafo needs a ride to Meiron. Now, that's a very unusual ride. Most of the time, they're calling a taxi. They want a ride to the other side of town. It's not so much money. A ride to Meiron, a ride to Tveria is going to be a lot of money. So one taxi responds, I'm on my way. I'm a few blocks away. I'm on my way. Another taxi was really excited, so he quickly swoops in. He starts driving down that block, starts calling out, who's the person who needed the ride to Meiron? Who needed the ride to Tveria? I'm the taxi. You called me. And he steals the ride from his friend. So again, a similar question, but that was something that was very heavily discussed and debated at the time. Is that something that is permissible or perhaps not. So let's look at the Gemara. And what's beautiful about this is the Gemara actually talks about the case. Then we have to do a little bit of interpretation to figure out what the parameters of the case are and whether it fits our case or not. But the source is really from this Gemara, Maseches Kiddushin, Nun Tes Amud Aleph. If you look halfway down the Yamud, the Gemara tells a story about Rav Gidel. And it says that Havi Mahapech Ba'ahi Ara, Rav Gidel was negotiating an agreement on a certain piece of land. And there he is in tough negotiations, trying to figure out the right price, trying to figure out what he's going to pay for it. And all of a sudden, his friend, Rav Abba, goes ahead and he buys it. So Rav Gidel is beside himself and he can't believe it. How did my friend just go behind my back? He knows I'm negotiating a deal here. And then he goes to the seller and he buys it for himself. That doesn't seem to be a proper thing to do. It seems very unethical. So the Gemara says that Rav Gidel is furious and he decides to go to discuss it with Rav Zeira. Now the Chafetz Chaim, by the way, you know what's also beautiful when you go through a Shaila is when you look at the Gemara, there are so many other tangential issues that come up that are worthy of consideration. So here the Gemara says, one second, Rav Zeira was approached because two individuals were having a disagreement. And one of them, who's angry, goes to discuss it with a third party. Asks the Chafetz Chaim, what right do you have to share this negative information with a third party? Don't we know that there are laws of Lashon Hara? So what right do you have to share? You know a piece of negative information about someone, you go share it with whoever you want just because you're angry? Is that an excuse? Is that a right that you have? So it so happens that the Chafetz Chaim learns from this Gemara that it seems that if a person is going to share that information with a third party, but by doing so you think that it's going to bring about a result for the person who has hurt you, you would be allowed to do that. Very interesting. So for example, says the Chafetz Chaim, somebody steals money from me. I don't know how I'm going to get the money back. I can't just walk into their house and take it back, then I'll get arrested. So I go and I tell somebody who's influential to them, by the way, he knows that you stole his money, and he expects you to give it back. You have been exposed. We know what you're up to. You're allowed to share that information if you think that the person you're sharing it with is going to be able to undo the hurt or the harm that was done. Chafetz Chaim learns that halacha from this Gemara. Very interesting. So the Gemara here says that Rav Gidel is upset as his friend Rav Abba, and he goes ahead to Rav Zeira and he tells him, by the way, this is what happened to me. It's a terrible story. So Rav Zeira says, don't worry about it. When he comes to visit me on Yom Tov, the practice was that everybody used to go visit the rabbi on Yom Tov, so when he comes to visit me on Yom Tov, I'll have a discussion with him. I don't want to alarm him, I don't want to shock him, but I'll bring it up with him. So fine. The Gemara says that Rav Abba shows up on Yom Tov, and Rav Zeira approaches him and he says, I have a question for you. What would you think about the following hypothetical case? Ani hamahapech b'charara. If I have a poor man who finds something in the middle of the street, and he's trying to figure out how to get it onto his pickup truck, he's trying to figure out how to get it to his house, and he's already handling it, would you be able to go ahead and take it from beneath him? If you happen to have a truck there, can you go and grab it from him? Obviously, it's not yet in his hands. You see that he's trying to figure out how to take it. So would you have a right to then take something that you know somebody else is trying to take? So Rav Abba turns back to him and he says, that's terrible. Why would you do such a thing? That's really spiteful. You see that somebody else is eyeing an item and they have every intention to take it or to buy it, and you undercut them and you just try to take it without them noticing or with them noticing, that's really not right. And he says that would be a very nasty thing to do, and I would say that that person is called a Rasha. That person is a Rasha. It's not right. It just seems that you don't have ethics and morality. So he says, so I have a question for you. If you believe that that person is a Rasha, why is it that your friend who was trying to buy a field and he was negotiating on a price was about to buy it and then you went behind his back and you bought it instead of him? How do you explain that? And he says, I had no idea. I didn't know he was negotiating anything. Nobody gave me the benefit of the doubt. Nobody told me anything. I had no idea. I heard there was a piece of property available. I thought it was a good investment in real estate. So I went ahead, I put in a bid. Little did I know that my friend was already bidding on it. I had no clue. So he says, okay, so what should we do? Maybe we should give it back to him. He says, you know, it's a bad simon. It doesn't look good if the first piece of property that you ever invest in, you sell off right after you buy it. So I don't want to do that. You know what? I'll give it to him as a gift. I love him so much. I didn't want to hurt him. I'll give it to him. It's fine. His friend turns back to him and he says, I don't accept gifts from anybody. The pasuk says, "Sone matanos yichye." I have bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anything I'm supposed to have in my life will come to me. I don't need your presence. So I don't want to accept a gift. So, classic Gemara story. The Gemara says, this one says, I want to give it to you as a present. The other one says, I'm not accepting it. He says, well, I'm not accepting your gift. And he says, I don't want to sell it to you. Back and forth. The Gemara says it was a stalemate. And in the end, this property lay foul. And nobody touched it. And it was referred to as Ara Derabbanan, as the property of the rabbis. Because it belonged to two rabbis. Nobody knew what to do. And nobody had any use for it because nobody knew how to handle the situation. That's what the Gemara tells us. Very interesting story. And the question then becomes, how do we move on from there to our case? How do we move on to a relevant halacha, as we mentioned? Now, by the way, the Gemara here mentions that if you have a situation where somebody buys a piece of property, it would be a bad siman for that person to sell off the property to someone else. Does that apply today? We have people all the time who buy a piece of property and flip it to someone else. So Rabbi Yashiv writes, come on. Now we know somebody buys a starter home. That's the first piece of property they ever own. The intent obviously was, it's a small house. They have a small family. Obviously, their intention when they bought it was that they're going to sell it when the time comes, when it's appropriate, and they're going to buy a bigger one. That's fine. So he says, that's not what the Gemara means. The Gemara is referring to a case where you have a situation where somebody bought an investment, and it seems like this was a long-term investment, and then they're going to have to go the next week and sell it off to someone else. Yeah, it's going to raise eyebrows. People are going to say, oh, he obviously is not really a good businessman, doesn't know what he's doing. He just invested in a piece of property. He had to sell it off right away. Obviously, he didn't do his accounting properly, and he really shouldn't be invested with in the future. And therefore, Rabbi Yashiv writes, he doesn't think that this is relevant in the average case that we're talking about. Another interesting point is, there are some who suggest that maybe that simin ra, when we say selling off a piece of property right when you buy it, the Gemara here that mentions that is a simin ra, maybe that's only in Chutz Laaretz, not in Eretz Yisrael. Why would that be? Why would that only be in Chutz Laaretz, not in Eretz Yisrael? So they quote that the Chasam Sofer has a fascinating tshuva, where the Chasam Sofer says that there are many things that people are worried about. You know, I have to say, probably the most common shaila I get all year, probably the most common shaila is, my wife is pregnant and the grandmother died, can she go to the cemetery? Nobody ever heard this question? Okay, I probably get that once a week. There is no source in halacha that says that a pregnant woman is not allowed to go to a cemetery. There is a source in halacha that a pregnant woman should not go to the zoo, by the way. It does say that what a woman sees when she's pregnant somehow impacts the child, the embryo. And therefore, it does say in halacha that if you're going to look at an animal, maybe that will have some kind of negative implication on the child because you don't want the child picking up the tendencies of an animal. What that means, I don't exactly know. But that is what it says. It says nowhere in halacha that she's not allowed to go to a cemetery. So that's just an interesting question. And because there's a kohen in the room, maybe more, it's even a serious shaila. A pregnant wife of a Kohen, is she allowed to go to a cemetery? Because maybe she's carrying a boy, and maybe that boy is already not allowed to be metame to a mace. Interesting question. For another time, not for tonight. We can't discuss everything in one night. But you should just know, hafochba v'hafochba dekulaba. Everything comes back around, and everything is interconnected. So here, there are many halachas. So I think the second most frequent question that I get, aside from, can my pregnant wife go to the cemetery for the grandmother's funeral? Second most common question is, we're moving into a house and we're doing some construction. We have to close off a window. Do we have to leave a little hole in the window? Are we allowed to close it off? Again, this is a mystical idea. It's something that is discussed, but the Chasam Sofer says that there are many different things that people are careful about when they build a house. They build a new house that has to be like this, has to be like that. Writes the Chasam Sofer, all of those things are only when you build a house in Chutz Laaretz. Why? What's the difference when you build a house here or in Eretz Yisrael? So the Chasam Sofer says, because building a house in Eretz Yisrael is such a big mitzvah, there's no way anything bad can possibly come from that. You don't have to worry about simin ra, simin this, simin that. That's not a concern. You don't have to worry about it at all. But when we're talking about a situation where you're in a new house in Chutz Laaretz, that is where the concern is. And that's what some take from the Chasam Sofer, that to our case as well, you might be able to extrapolate that we have to only be concerned about a simin ra selling off a property when it's in Chutz Laaretz. But when it's in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to be concerned. Either way, the Rishonim now have a dispute. You look in the 12th century, first we're talking about in the Gemara. The Amoraim had this whole discussion about undercutting someone else, a third party interference. Are you allowed to? Are you not? That's an interesting question. But now the Rishonim ask, what would the halacha be? What would the halacha be? Does the money have to be returned or not? Just turn it off. It's okay. Next week they'll catch it. Does the money have to be returned or perhaps not? Right? If I stole a business deal from someone, do I have to actually go then and return it to them or not? And that is a dispute among the Rishonim, whether or not you have to actually give back the money. The Hagos Maimini, again, skipping another generation. The 12th century, you have the Ramban and Rabbeinu Tam Discree, how far we take it and whether or not you actually need to give back the money. The Hagos Maimini, the end of the 13th century, he was one of the Talmidim of the Maharambi Rutenberg. He writes that the answer is, just turn it, it's fine. The Hagos Maimini says that we go so far as to say, when the Gemara says this person is a Rasha, does that have any implication? What do I care if you call me a Rasha, right? What do I care? Call me whatever you want. The answer is you should care. Why? Why should you care? What would an implication of that be? Implication would be, writes the Maharambi Rutenberg, the Torah says you're not allowed to use a witness who is a Rasha. So let's say I'm making a wedding and I want to have two Eidei Kedushin. I can't have one of them who's a Rasha. He's pasul le'edus. He's not somebody that is acceptable as an aid. So the Maharambi Rutenberg writes, I'm sorry, the Hagos Maimini writes, that maybe that would be a very serious consequence. If we deem this person a Rasha for doing what he did, the consequence of that might be that next week when he's at a wedding, he's going to have a major problem. My father told me that he was once sitting at a wedding. He was sitting at a wedding many times in his life. He was sitting at a wedding on one occasion and they called up two people for Eidei Kiddushin. My father happened to be sitting next to one of them. My father said, you know, they just called you up. He said, no, it's fine, they'll find someone else. So he said, what do you mean you'll find someone else? They just called you up. He kept saying, no, they'll find someone else, it's okay. So he couldn't understand. And finally, they realized that he was ignoring them, so they found someone else. My father said the next day he was on the front page of the New York Times for some terrible scandal. And he had embezzled money, whatever it was. He was accused of doing something very, very wrong with the government. And my father said, at least he's a very erlich aganav. He stole the money, so he's a ganav. But at least he was erlich enough to say, you know, they're calling me up as an Eidei Kiddushin. I don't have to invalidate the wedding that we're at. So that was very nice of him, a very kind gesture on his part. So anyway, the question over here is, how far do we take it? Another, let's say somebody's selling a piece of property. And I was negotiating to get that property, and now you come in out of nowhere and you try to take it.
And you buy it.
What? I bought it, but you were trying to buy it. So the question is, do I have to give it back to you? If I came in the middle of your negotiation, does the seller... No, the seller can keep it. He sold it. But does the buyer have to give it back to the first person who was trying to buy it, who we undercut? They're exchanging. Yeah. No, not paying twice, but in exchange. Does he have to sell it back? Yeah, that's the question.
Does it depend on how the second person found out about the sale?
Yes, so now let's just get into the parameters of this halacha for a moment. A very important question. So number one, the Rishonim here say, it's not so clear exactly what the Gemara is describing. But Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam disagree. And Rashi says this is very expansive. This Gemara includes every case. Whenever you see somebody who's trying to eye something and trying to attain ownership of something, you have no right to get involved. Whether it's something they find in the middle of the street, whether it's a business deal, anything that they already have their eyes on, you don't have a right to get involved. That would be inappropriate. That's what Rashi says. And Rabbeinu Tam says, you have to limit it. That's not fair. It's not true. If somebody is, let's say, walking by in the street, and they find a mitzia, he says, they find $100 in the middle of the street, and you see somebody's eyeing it. So you have every right to take it the same way they have a right to take it. What's the likelihood that you're going to find another $100 on the next block? Zero, right? So when you have something like that, finders keepers, look, I have a right to take it the same way you have a right to take it. So you got to fend for yourself. If you want it, so take it. If you don't want it, somebody might come quicker than you and take it before you. Rabbeinu Tam says in that case, that's not called ani hamahapich b'charor. That's too bad. When you're talking about business, why would you go and do a third-party interference when somebody's trying to buy a field, when you can just go down the block and buy a different field? So one second. So first of all, Rabbeinu Tam says, if this is something that it's so unlikely that you're going to find another one of, then you have every right to take it the same way they do. But if it's something that's just very easy for you to go and buy a field somewhere else, and you're choosing not to do that just to spite the other person, that is where the Gemara describes that you've done something wrong. So that's a very fundamental dispute, and that actually comes down to a disagreement in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah dispute, what is the bottom line? And the Ramah paskins, the halacha is, that we only apply this case in business. We do not apply this to a metziah. So if I have something, $100, in the middle of the street, and somebody's looking at it, but they have not yet put their hands on it, I have a right to go and take it. There was actually an amazing shaila many years ago. I don't know how much time we have, but an amazing shaila many years ago that was discussed. There was actually somebody on a Shabbos who saw $100 in the middle of the street in Israel, and he was eyeing it, but he knew it was Shabbos, so it's muktzah, he can't touch it. So he's standing there the whole Shabbos on the side of the road, waiting till Shabbos is over. He didn't go to shul, he's waiting, wants the $100. There's somebody else who also saw it, but he said, look, I'm not going to stand here the rest of Shabbos. So he turns to the other one and he says, look, I was eyeing that the same way you were eyeing it. You know what? There's no reason for both of us to stand here. How about I'll stand here for the rest of Shabbos, I'll give you 50, I'll take 50, and we won't fight. How's that? So that's a great idea. After Shabbos, he picks it up. It was a fake $100 bill. And his shaila was, do I need to pay my friend $50? Because I said, I'll give you 50, I'll keep 50. Was the understanding of my agreement only if it turns out that I actually get $50 myself, then I'll give you the other 50? Or was the understanding that I'm mechayev myself, that I obligate myself to give you $50 regardless? Interesting question. Nothing to do with this, but interesting nonetheless. So the Shulchan Aruch writes here, the Ramah comes to the conclusion that if you have a situation where it is a metziah, where somebody finds a $100 bill in the middle of the street, that is somewhere where we don't have this application of the Gemara. But if it's talking about a business deal, and you can just as easily buy this item somewhere else, you don't have a right to go and run a third-party interference. That is what the Gemara says. The Sri De'esh has a very fascinating tshuva. The Sri De'esh was Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg. He lived through the Holocaust. He passed away in the 1960s. He was actually the head of the Hildesheimer Seminary in Israel. I'm sorry, in Europe. My apologies. And then he lived through the Kovna Ghetto. He then was sent to a labor camp, and ultimately he survived the war miraculously, and he ended up in Switzerland. And the Sri De'esh has very beautiful tshuvas where he writes about many contemporary issues, and the Sri De'esh says that there was a shaila that was sent in from Königsberg, which was somewhere near the Baltic Sea. And the Sri De'esh writes that there was a community where they had one part of the community was a bunch of Yekas, a bunch of Germans. The other part of the community was a bunch of Russians. So obviously they weren't allowed to daven in the same shul. We have our monogamy, you have your monogamy, nobody could get along. But then the community was dwindling, and it was becoming smaller and smaller. They realized there's so much overhead, so much operating cost for each of the two shuls, and nobody's there. Let's get together and figure out how to just have one shul. So a nice idea. So they all decided, they had a board meeting, they're going to get together, they're going to sell off one of the buildings, they're going to all merge into one building, they're going to get together and have one nice kehila. Very nice. However, the problem was that each shul had their own hired chazan. It doesn't say that they had a rabbi. They each had a hired chazan. And the question was, which one are we going to keep? So naturally, the two shuls decided, let's look which one is more talented than the other. Now, it doesn't mean they were obviously both professional chazanim. So how are you going to figure out which one is more talented? So they saw that one of them, not only is he a chazan, but he also knows how to do shechita. Oh, so he's a valuable asset to the community. He's not only a chazan, he's also a shochet. So if he's able to do both, we should keep him. Why would we keep the other one? The other one realized that he's falling behind, so he quickly went, he took a course in shechita, took the bechina, and he got a smicha in shechita, and he says, hey, here I am. Now I'm a valid candidate just like the other one. And they sent the shaila to the Sri De'esh. Was that fair of him to do? Was he allowed to do that when he knows that the other chazan was going to get the job because he was more talented, he was more proficient in the area of shechita, and now he quickly went ahead and taught himself shechita? Is that something that he had a right to do when he knew the job was going to someone else? And the Sri De'esh discusses and he says, of course it's allowed. Why? Because there's only one job available. There's only one job available. It's like there's only $100 bill in the middle of the street. So either I'm going to take it or you're going to take it. So you can't be upset when I get it. Everybody has a right to take it. The same thing over here. There's one job available. Either you're going to take the job or I'm going to take the job. Right now, both of us have equal opportunity. So you have to prove your worth. So he says, I did whatever I could to prove my worth. And now I taught myself Hilcha Shechita. And now I'm just as worthy as you are. And that was something that he had every right to do. What you would not be allowed to do is, if there was, let's say, a school. The Achronim talk about this. Let's say, the Shulchan Aruch talks about it. Let's say there was a school who has a higher teacher. And you go to the school and you say, can I give a model lesson because I think that I can do a much better job than that teacher. That, says the Shulchan Aruch, is not proper because that person already has the job. You're not allowed to steal somebody's job from them. If there's an opening in the school and they're not sure and you want to show that you're better than the other candidate, that's life, that's business, that's what happens. But to go to somebody who has a pre-existing job and try to pull them out of the job, the Gemara says, that's yored letochem nasar shel chaver. I'm not allowed to go and take away the parnasa of somebody just because I want it. I wouldn't be allowed to do that. But once it's out in the open and it's available for anybody to take, so I have a right just like he has a right. And that would be something that is completely valid. How does that trickle down to our situation? Let's remind ourselves. The Shaila was, somebody was suggested to a young woman. Right? You see how it all comes together? It's amazing. So somebody was suggested to a young woman. And the question is, this couple is going to go on a date. Instead of them going on a date, I decided that I really want to marry this young woman. I want to try to get her for myself. So I went around my friend's back, got somebody to set me up with the girl, and now I'm getting engaged. Is that something that is subject to this whole discussion, or perhaps not? This happens to be a discussion that was raised in the 1600s. There's a sefer called Halachas Ketanos. It was written in Morocco by one of the great Gedolim named Rab Yisrael Yaakov Chagiz, right? And he writes in his sefer Halachas Ketanos that somebody once came to him and asked him this question, and he was so taken aback. That's an amazing question. Would a person be allowed to do it? And he gets into a whole discussion, as we just did. Followed many, many, many years later, that was in the 1600s. In the 1900s, Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Igros Moshe discusses the very same question. And he wonders, what is the halacha? Does the guy now have to break off the shidduch and say, you know, I really got into this mistakenly, it's not right that I stole this idea from my friend, and I really should have been more careful when I started, and he really had the opportunity and I stole it from him. Is that something that he has to be concerned about, or perhaps not? Rav Moshe Feinstein says, absolutely not. Number one, Rav Moshe says, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, the whole discussion that the Gemara has here in the first place about ani amahapech b'charara, when somebody's trying to negotiate a property, it's only after the set price has been negotiated and we shook hands and we wrote a contract, and then somebody comes along and tries to break the contract. That's where it's a problem. But as long as the negotiation is still going on, Shulchan Aruch says, that would not be a problem at all. That's business. That's the way the world runs. You never know if the deal is going to go through. So what? The seller should lose out on a potential buyer because you're in the middle of negotiating? That's the way it goes. That's the way it goes. Negotiations sometimes work out, sometimes they don't. And if I want to negotiate and I think I can negotiate better, it's okay. And therefore, Moshe says, you have a boy and a girl going on a date. You never know whether it's going to work out or it won't. Until the deal is sealed, until they actually get engaged, you don't really know that it's going to happen. Even once they get engaged, you don't know 100% that it's going to happen. You think it's going to happen. Most of the time it happens. But you don't know. Even after they get married, you don't know that it's going to remain that that's the case. So again, you have to be reasonable. Once they get engaged and they make a commitment to each other, so the assumption is you're going to go ahead with it. In that case, says Rav Moshe, maybe that's comparable to the situation in the Shulchan Aruch. But before they even went on a date, or even while they're dating, somebody else poaches this young woman and decides he's going to somehow get her to be interested in him, that wouldn't be a problem at all. The same way in business, it wouldn't be a problem. That's not a problem in Shidduchim either. And number two, Rav Moshe says, if you think about our case, the truth is that this case is the same as Hefker. The case of Hefker is there's a $100 bill in the middle of the street and only one person's going to get it. It's the same thing here. There's only one young woman that everybody wants to marry. So either I'm going to get her or somebody else is going to get her. So do whatever you can to figure out how to get yourself married to her. You got to do whatever you can. My friend wants it. Okay, so my friend can do whatever he can and let him try to impress her. I can do whatever I can, then I should try to impress her. But that is exactly the case, writes Rav Moshe, that the Gemara describes as Hefker, where the Gemara says, and I'm sorry, Rabbeinu Tam writes, and that's the way the Ramah paskins, that this only applies by business, because you can buy this field, so buy another field. What are you driving another person crazy? What are you getting involved? Why are you running an interference? But when you're talking about a situation where there's only one of that item, like you said, an auction, there's only one of that item, so I have a right, I'm entitled to it the same way anybody else is. And therefore, in that case, says Rav Moshe, wouldn't be a problem at all. There's something that is so fascinating in this tshuva. And I know somebody's going to ask me afterward, and Stewie mentioned this to me today. How could it be that you have this whole discussion in the first place? Don't we believe in Bashert? I say, if you believe in Bashert, so obviously it wasn't for me, right? How can I be angry at my friend that he married the girl? Obviously it wasn't for me. If he ended up marrying her, it means it was for him. That's a $1 million question, something that we really should think about. Maybe we'll continue with that next week if that's of interest to anybody. But it's an interesting question to think about in general. How far does it go when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mezavik Zivugim and he sets people up? What does that mean? Does that mean that if somebody's destined to me, they're only going to end up with me and nobody else? Could it be that somebody could possibly, potentially steal a shidduch from me? What does that mean? And Rav Moshe actually throws into the mix here. Maybe we'll pick up with this. The Gemara says that we have a halacha, ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. You're not allowed to mix up different simchas. So the Gemara says, because of that, you're not allowed to get married on Yom Tov. Right? Not allowed to get married on Yom Tov. Why? Or on Chol HaMoed, I should say. Yom Tov you can't because you can't make a kinyan. But you can't get married on Chol HaMoed because you're supposed to be busy with the Simcha of Yom Tov. You can't put your head in the new marriage. Your head's going to be all over the place. So, Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. What about getting engaged on Chol HaMoed? So the Gemara says, I've been dating this woman for 6 months, and I really want to get engaged. Problem is, now it's Chol HaMoed. I'm going to be very excited when I get engaged. So is that a violation of Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed to get engaged? The Gemara says, it should have been. Should have been a problem. But the Gemara says, you better make sure to seal the deal as soon as you can. Because, Shema Yikadmenu Acher Berachamim. Maybe somebody else is going to daven a really good Shmona Esrei. God's going to accept their prayers. And he's going to take the girl that was supposed to be getting engaged to me, and he's going to figure out how to get himself engaged to her instead. That's what the Gemara says. And therefore, because of that concern, you'd be allowed to get engaged even on Chol HaMoed, which really shouldn't make sense. But you're allowed to do it because Shema Yikadmenu Acher Berachamim. Now what does that mean, says Rav Moshe? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to answer your tefillah when you're doing something wrong? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to answer your tefillah when you're asking him to steal a shidduch from somebody else? Obviously, he says, it's permissible. Obviously, if somebody else is dating this young woman, it's totally permissible for you to figure out how to get yourself married to her. Otherwise, do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu would answer your tefillah? Is that what it means? So Rav Moshe discusses that. It's just a fascinating piece to this whole puzzle, but something maybe to think about. I see we're over time a little bit. But once again, very fascinating to me how this is a shaila that is discussed over many, many millennia, as is every shaila. It starts in the Gemara, goes to the Rishonim, goes further down to the Shulchan Aruch and the Achronim. We'll discuss the implications of every shaila, but this is just something to think about until we meet again next week. Shabbat shalom.